Want more of the Josh Scanlon podcast?
Please. Please.
Here you go. The Josh Scanlon podcast starts right now. Yeah! All right. We on. It is June. January, what's today? January 15th, I think. January 15th? Why do I keep doing that? Yeah, January 16th, excuse me. So we're live in from Alpharetta/Milton, Georgia. So let's, got to get myself over here so I can get.
So we're live in from Alpharetta/Milton, Georgia.
All right, where am I here? Hold on just a second, my friends. Looks like I'm doing that live top chat. We've got to top chat here. So how do I get that chat thing again? Which someone had showed me how to do, and now I've since forgot. Ah, the chat box was where? That's not what we want. We want that. Hello, there you go. Right on. Cool. There we go. Hey, Filks, what's up, man? What's up, or lady? How are you? So we're going to bring this over here. We're going to move this guy down here. And we're going to put that guy right there. All right. So we got somebody on there. All right, cool. Good. Would you mind giving me a thumbs up if you can hear me okay? I don't have my... I don't think I need that on. All right. All right. Cool. Good. Right on, Shirley. All right. I guess that's a wink means you can hear. Okay. Okay. Right on, Richard. Mary. Hey, Mary. Mark W. Mary Hampton, right on. All right, Filks, 1323. Appreciate that, my friends. That's fantastic. And a time check here. We got 7:56. Frank F., Mary Landis, hello. And right now in Georgia, in North Georgia, it is 40 degrees. Look at that, 40 degrees. And it feels like 37. Nuts. I used to live here in Bernie, Texas. It's 57 there in Bernie, Texas. I used to live here in Haddonfield, New Jersey. Oops. That's where I was born and raised. Peaks Island, Maine, 34 degrees. Cool. First timer, Tom and Floor. Right on, man. Appreciate you coming. Peaks Island right now in Maine is 34 degrees, but it feels like 25. Barr. And then on Monday, it's going to be 15 and feels like 15 at a high with 6 as a low. If any of y'all are from Kansas City, I think the Chiefs-Patriots game this weekend is going to be a bear for cold. And you heard it here first. Patriots will go down 24. They never get killed and then they never – hey, what's going on, big man? Scott, I think, right? Patriots never get killed, but so they're going to lose 24-20 is my prediction. And if you're a New England fan by birth, you always predict the your teams will lose, at least if you're born and raised in the 70s and going into the 80s. So what's up, Tony? Yeah, right on, Scott. Mary Landis says go Chiefs. I don't think go Chiefs, but I just don't see the Patriots winning. They went to Denver a few years back. They couldn't beat the Broncos in Denver. They just don't have a good road record, that's for sure. So as much as I love to see Touchdown Tommy get number 6, it's not going to happen. It's going to be a Chiefs-Saints Super Bowl. You heard it here first, my friends. Chiefs-Saints. Chiefs haven't been to Super Bowl since what? Super Bowl 4. When they played the Vikings. Super Bowl 5? Maybe Super Bowl 6. Isn't that crazy? The Chiefs haven't been to the Super Bowl since like 1972 or 73 or something like that. Nuts. All right, so we got a question. What would I say to a doctor who wants to give up a $500,000 salary in his mid-30s to retire? Go sell, Mark. No way. I can't stand the Saints, man. Never liked the Saints just because, they play in a dome, and, B, I just never liked them. I don't know why. They've always annoyed me. Even though back in the old day when the old Tampa Bay Bucks were 0-26 to start the year and they brought Doug Williams in and they went to the NFC Championship against the Rams, I've always been fond of the Buccaneers as this expansion team. And then you know, Mark, what the Saints would do when they first started out. The Aints, some of the wearing the bags over their head. But I got a good friend of mine who actually I'm going to do a video with, a man named Rich, who lives down that way in New Orleans. He's from Baton Rouge. And we're going to do a video together. He's a big Saints fan, LSU fan. Oh, yeah, yeah. Can I explain the difference between a 5304 and a 5305? I don't know, Tony. I'm not sure what those are. All right. So let's get started with this. I'm in the land of the Falcons now. Yeah. All right. So first thing, appreciate y'all being here. It's 2000 hours, as we say in military time, or 8 o'clock East time. First thing I want to start with is that I want to say, well, say it in your mind, but it's certainly a quick prayer that John Bogle has died tonight about an hour ago. John Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, and that an 89-year-old man. And that guy's one of my heroes of all time. This is a perfect example of why capitalism beats socialism every time. John Bogle increased the standard of living for millions and millions of people. And no socialist program will ever do what Bogle did as a capitalist. Just one man with an idea, one lady with an idea. And I just am very sad to hear of his passing. I know he's in a better place as a Christian. You always know at the end of the day, you're up there in front of God and God is saying, well done, good and faithful servant. Just as sad because Bogle was a good man. Just, you know, I actually met the guy. He didn't want to know me from Adam, but I met him when he signed my book, which I got back there. Common sense on mutual funds. And that, you know, I don't want to say breaks my heart because I know he's in a better place, but he's one of the good guys. And to see him passing, it's too bad for sure. So if you get a chance, say thank you to the good Lord for bringing us John Bogle, the Vanguard Group, which is his company, which he got fired from when he was 70 years old. They said, you got to leave. And I'll never forget that. I was at Vanguard working there on the phones, just picking up phones. And I got an email from a very prominent Wall Street Journal reporter who wanted me for some reason to give him insight on what was going on at Vanguard. I'll never forget this. And I can't remember why I got that email. I think I was emailing this guy a couple things, probably just being my normal annoying self. And I said, man, I'm not saying anything about the internal workings of Vanguard, dude. You know, find some other freaking guy to, you know, leak that info out. Never forget that. I'm actually kind of taken aback by that, but I guess that's how political or finance reporters work. They try to get people to do stuff that they should not do. That stuff should have been kept secret. And it's just sad to see Bogle go. All right. So if you get a chance, say a prayer. His surviving. I'm not sure if his wife is still here. But just, again, I did a video on this relative to Fidelity, Vanguard, and Schwab the other day. The Johnson family at Fidelity are worth well north of $20 billion. Bogle, well short of $100 million, if you think about that. Think about that. The Johnson family at Fidelity, Bogle at Vanguard. Vanguard is what has done better for more people. What has dwarfed the investment world. And that just goes to show you why John Bogle is such a good man. All right, so let's talk. Hey, Alberto, right on. All right, so we're going to start. I have some questions here, but we'll start here, man. The first one I had, what would I say to a doctor who wants to give up a $500,000 salary in his mid-30s to retire? I'd say, man, more power to you. I'm telling you, life's too short, man. I was making 500. I was making good money when I left USAA, and I could have stayed there, my crazy old commute, and gone down there. And I was making good money, big retirement plan. And man, I can't tell you how much happier I am. No other way around it. I'm 48 and a half, I'm not in my mid 30s, but if you do follow Rick Edelman, and I find Rick annoys me some ways, but I think I like him. He does rub me wrong. I probably rub him wrong too, but he talks about needing two or three, if not four careers over the course of a new life, given all the technology and things. And just if you're going to live another, let's say 100 years, I mean, I don't expect that, but let's just say you did. Do you really want to be doing the same old crappy doctor or financial planning job? I don't know, for another 100 years? Probably not. So go find something else, man. Do something else. If you have debt, that's a different story. And yeah, I imagine you probably do doc, which sucks, but that's one of the reasons you can't have debt, because you got debt, you're tied to your line of work. So I would say money is not all cracked up to be. The older I get, the more I realize that, for sure. I've never been big on money. I mean, look, I grew up poor in Maine, didn't care. We were raised to think rich people are evil, and I realized since that's mistaken. But at the end of the day, the money doesn't mean crap to me. As long as I get enough to pay the bills, pay for the stupid mortgage I got, and to buy a book on Amazon, which I'm looking at, they keep piling up. As long as I get enough money to pay the bills, I'm comfortable, and that's all I need to be. And if you can do that, you'll be happier without the commute, without the controversy at work, the politics. Not only that, I think the world is, or at least America, is going towards a more localized economy. I mean, I kind of hope that. Yeah, I really do. We'll see. We'll see. As I sit there and I buy stuff on Amazon that's shipped from China. Yeah. Does passive income account for IRA deposits, says Marie? You can't, if that's all you got, you can't make an IRA, a Roth IRA contribution. Passive income is not earned income. So if it's passive income, that won't qualify for you to be able to make a Roth IRA contribution. It has to be earned, a W-2 or a 1099, unfortunately. Now, if you're married, Marie, and your spouse has earned income, it doesn't matter. You can absolutely put money to a Roth. So let's just say your spouse makes $15,000 digging ditches and you don't make anything. You can make the max contributions to both your Roth IRAs because your spousal's earned income would be applicable to you. Another reason why being married is a wonderful thing for all people, regardless of who it is you love. Get married if there's someone near and dear in your life, because it opens up a different aspect of financial planning that individuals just don't have. Yeah, I'm in the lane of the Falcons now. Yes, I get that, Scott, but the Falcons... other than Billy White Shoes Johnson and when they had Jamal Anderson playing against the Broncos, never did much. And Tony asked, can I explain the difference between the 5304 and 5305 simple plan? I don't know what those are, Tony, so I'm ignorant. Sorry. I'm better to put money in my Roth IRA earlier in the year than later. So that's a great question. If you're doing the front end, absolutely. I mean, my goodness, the market goes up more than it goes down. The house is on your side. So if you look at going to Las Vegas or something like that, you know, there's a 52% chance they're going to win and a 48% chance you're going to win. The odds are in favor of them. And the same things with the markets. So the market has historically 54% of the time is up, 46% of the time is down. So it's dump it in there and be done with it. That's what I say. Absolutely. How does, if any, affect a pension moving from California to tax-free state? How is there any effect of a pension from moving from California to a tax-free state? Well, the first and foremost is that there won't be any income tax, state income tax, certainly if you move to a tax-free state. On the Fed's the big one though, man. The Fed's is the big one for sure. And that won't affect you at all from the feds because they're going to get you regardless of where you live. I don't know. Alberto, I don't know. He might be answering. Puerto Rico, maybe not. I don't know. I'm not sure how that works in Puerto Rico. But any of the other 50, you're going to pay the feds to be the bulk. Now, if you move to a tax-free state, again, there won't be a state income tax. So you're going to be good to go. Won't affect you in that regard. Just be advised. I tell people this all the time. Don't just look at this. New Hampshire, I think it is South Dakota, New Hampshire, Alaska, Washington, Texas, Tennessee, and Florida. Those are the seven states with no state income tax. And everyone thinks those are the most advantageous to retire to. It's simply not the case, folks. I mean, Georgia, if you live in here in Georgia and you're 65 or older, you have the first $65,000 of your income is tax-free. And so if, Charlotte and Josh, we live in Georgia, $130,000 of our income is tax-free once we hit the age of 65. That's just as good as living in Tennessee from an income tax perspective, because there ain't any. Now, Tennessee has higher sales taxes. Georgia has higher property taxes. You got to weigh the options there. But I'm telling you, and then Kentucky right up the street. So you got Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia. Everyone looks at Tennessee. Well, you got Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida. Everyone looks at Florida and Tennessee as a mecca for tax reductions, and Kentucky's fantastic as well, even though there is a state income tax. And so I just tell people all the time, just look where you're going, because if your income is moderate to low, state tax aren't a big deal at all. Let me just share with this. I'm going to drink a cup of my tea. Peppermint tea. I was talking to these folks yesterday in Maryland, and they were adamant they had to escape Maryland because it was run by progressives and it's pretty high tax. But it's simply not true if your income is moderately low. And my inclination is I attract a lot of people of conservative spending habits on this YouTube channel. And I imagine a lot of you guys have relatively conservative spending habits as well. Thus, your income's moderately low. In this case, they didn't have to leave Maryland. I mean, just there was no taxes there, none. And if they kept their 401k as opposed to rolling it to an IRA, their taxes are literally a couple hundred bucks a year in the state of Maryland. It's the feds that get them. The state doesn't do anything, and they like Maryland. Their daughter lives there. Their other daughter lives in Northern Virginia, and they're thinking about leaving Southern Virginia or something like that. I said, no, forget that. Stay in Maryland. I mean, you can't own various firearms, but you can own some. And they lived on the Eastern Shore. It's a beautiful place. And I said, no, stay there, man. You don't have to move. And they liked it. They bought a new house. They rebuilt it. I think they did the labor for it, and no reason to move. And so just essentially, that's why I got to get back doing these state-by-state taxes on $60,000. $60,000 is $5,000 a month in income. If you got $5,000 a month in income, and let's just say $30,000 comes from Social Security, $30,000 comes from other sources, be it pension or whatnot, you're just not going to have that much in state income tax. Now, if you go to a place like, I think it's Vermont or Wisconsin, there's a couple up there in the north, Kansas, I think. Some of those states, they're going to get you pretty good. There's another one I'm missing, a big one I forgot. But if you go into most states, even Massachusetts won't get you that badly. I mean, it's going to be more painful than if you're in New Hampshire, but at the end of the day, don't worry about the state income taxes, the feds that bite you. And that's why you need to really, really ramp up your Social Security planning. I'm just telling you, man, you got to do that. Got 10,000 subscribers. That's awesome. Thank you all. That's wonderful. Yeah, appreciate y'all. It's ironic. Today's the day I have 10,000 subscribers. And today's the day I do this Q&A. So much obliged for sure. Let's see. Does taking a 401k distribution count as income for a Roth IRA contribution if that's your only income? So Thomas, no, can't do that. You'd have to convert your 401k to a Roth. So just remember, there's two types of ways to fund a Roth. One, you fund it with contributions. Contributions, you have to have earned income. It's got to be earned. W-2 or 1099. That's it. You don't have either of those, you can't do it. And when I say you, it's you and or your spouse. All right. Your spouse can do it. 401k distribution is not earned income. Thus, that cannot be used to make a contribution to a Roth IRA. But it's just fine because now you say, well, forget that. I'm just going to do a conversion. So you got money in a 401k, a TSP, a 403b, an IRA, a regular IRA, anything. You can move money from that account into your Roth. It's not a contribution, it's a conversion. The exact same thing is going to happen. You're going to have to pay tax on the very first penny as ordinary income, but it's the exact same thing. So in your case, it's semantics to some degree, but you don't want a contribution with no earned income. It's just conversion, and either one is just fine. Actually, the conversion is preferable because you can put more. I mean, literally, Bill Gates today, if he had $1 trillion, $1 billion of Microsoft stock in an IRA, he could convert that to his Roth. Now, would he do that? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But he could do the whole thing, even if he's just sitting there, he and Melinda, going to charitable flying around the world doing charity events with no earned income. You could absolutely do that. In fact, the nice thing about that, too, just while I'm yapping here, let's say I had 100 shares of Microsoft stock in an IRA. And you're like, I'm Bill Gates. I like this Microsoft stock, but I want to grow tax free. You don't need to sell from the IRA and then buy it again in the Roth. You just do a like-kind transfer. All you're literally redoing is retitling the asset from your traditional IRA to your Roth. So you call your custodian, USAA or Fidelity, say, hey, I want to move my 100 shares in kind from my traditional to my Roth, and they can do that for you. You don't need to sell and buy. You don't need to do anything, just an in-kind transfer. And if your custodian can't do that, fire them and get somebody else, because that's easy. That's just retitling of paper. That's no big deal. Let's see. Thanks, Reply. I love what I do, but there's so much more in life to do. Well, yeah, if you love what you do, U.S. Army doc, no debt. Huh? And I think you probably got a pension coming at you, right, too, if you've been in the military for, well, maybe not. If you're only 30, I might hold tight there, my friend. If you're an Army doc and you're in your mid-30s, you probably don't have the pension. I'd wait until I'm 42. Obviously, you're an officer, so I'd wait a few more years before I separate from service for sure. That military pension is worth its weight in gold. Never mind with a TRICARE. What do you recommend for getting into the financial planning industry as someone young? You know, that's a great question. I did a video this morning, and the lighting was horrible, and I'll redo it again tomorrow. But that's a great question, Slider. And my video was on that you, whoever watches my crazy channel, you should maybe not hire a financial advisor. You should become one. And this is more geared towards older folks, because I think a lot of the older folks have a wonderful opportunity to really help middle-class people who are absolutely getting slapped around by these freaking big firms that don't care about them at all. And there's a huge need for good, solid financial planning advice from people who aren't going to charge you to manage money. And I just look at, you can look at any people who are 54, 58 years old who've been managing money. They know what's going on in their own financial situation. You know, they might not be John Bogle, rest his soul, but they certainly have done okay. And they don't need to be in sales like, I'm going to sell you this crazy variable annuity. It's just they know how to talk to people, A. They know enough about number crunching to say, hey, look, these are the things you need to do. And they're not going to steal $1 million from you. They're just going to say, I'm charging a fee. And I think that's a wonderful opportunity for more people who are looking at second careers. They're like, I don't know what to do. Well, look at maybe becoming a financial planner. Don't manage money. If you got to manage money, it's a whole different ball wax. You don't want to mess with that stuff. A, you're not going to help anybody by managing the money. You're just not. B, the regulatory environment for managing money is insane, which is why there's no YouTube channels of money managers, because the SEC or FINRA, whoever the insanity of the regulatory agencies are, will say, you can't say that. You're like, this is nuts. And so we're ceding the field to the insurance salesman, which drives me insane. So anyway, back to your question. What do you recommend for getting the financial planning industry as someone young? Experience. And I know experience is key. And I got to tell you, when I started in 1998 at Vanguard, I had been investing myself for 5 years. I had a degree in economics from George Mason. I had served 4 years in the Army. I had read French and FAMA. I studied a lot. I knew a lot. I thought I did. And I just looking in hindsight now is how much I did not know. It's all there is to it. And that doesn't mean I did anyone wrong. I was very, very fortunate. I've gone to Vanguard to learn, because that's a wonderful learning experience. Absolutely. But I didn't have any experience, man. Not experience as a professional financial advisor. I just had no experience in being a human being with investments to even look at on my own. And so because of that, the last 20 odd years has been wonderful for experience for me. And I just think experience counts a whole lot more than anything else, Slider. And what I'd suggest, Frank, is I'd go to Vanguard, I'd get on their phone team, and I'd say, look, I'm going to do this for 2 years. That's exactly what I did. Go to Vanguard, they'll pay for your Series 6 and 63 or what. I mean, this is, I don't know, if they, I'm sure they still will. Take their calls, learn how to talk to people, learn what people are interested in, get to know what drives people's decisions, and learn the Vanguard way of doing things, because that's superior, without question. Again, this isn't comprehensive financial planning. This is just starting in the business. You start with Vanguard, or I tell you what, this is going to seem odd. Work as a platform rep on a bank. Man, I am telling you, from a sales perspective, and just how to, I'm telling you right now, the best sales training I ever had was in platform rep as a bank, on a bank at First Union Bank, or I don't know what it's called anymore. But anyway, it was wonderful. Not because it's like, oh, here are the tricks of the trade. It's because it's like a puzzle. You're saying you're looking for your customers at the bank. You're saying you got this, you got that. How can we kind of rearrange things to make it more suitable for you? For instance, yeah, I'll never forget this. You had this lady had like a 10% auto loan on I forgot what those Ford smaller SUVs were called back in 2000. I forgot what they're called, Ford Escape. And I was like, and she just bought it. I said, man, you got all this equity in your home. You got a home equity loan or line. It was only 3.99 or whatever it was, and tax deductible. So why would you, I don't get it. And she goes, I know I could do that. There's experiences like that. That's wonderful. That helped me so much more as a financial planner, being able to talk about debt to income ratios, loan to value, LTV, all these different things, equity in your home, first mortgage, second mortgage, subordination. All these things are critical because the average person has debt. That's a fact. The average poor person is going to carry a mortgage, carry a loan, carry student loans. So if you can get to know that vernacular, you're going to be much more valuable to your client than just someone who says, you should buy this mutual fund because my broker dealer says it's great. Screw that. Get to learn financial planning. And so going as a platform rep at a bank, you'll learn more on apps. I'm just telling you, that's what I do. You might get paid $35,000 a year, maybe a little bit of commission if you sell people stuff. I get that. But, man, it's a wonderful gig, and I would absolutely recommend doing that. Why can't Vanguard offer? Yeah. Vanguard doesn't have brokered CDs, huh? So I know Schwab has brokered CDs. You sure about that, Robert? Robert Fitzgibbon says, why can't Vanguard offer CDs that match Navy Federal? Brokered CDs, if you have a brokerage firm like Schwab or USAA, what's the other one? It's just a guy at Merrill Lynch I just talked to this morning. They can go out in the market and buy CDs who want to be on their platform. And so what happens is Bank of Ohio will say, we want to, you know, your brokers, Smith Barney, to sell our CDs or USAA, and we want to be on your platform. And that's what a brokered CD is. So you have these FDIC insured CDs, essentially a bond, and the broker will actually be able to look at them, throughout the United States, all FDIC, and look at the best deal. The problem of that is it's the best deal for that platform, but it might not be the best deal overall, like, because Navy Federal is a credit union, all right? I don't think any credit unions are going to have the bank. There are CDs offered on a brokerage platform. I would highly suspect that would not be the case. So a credit union is a select group of people who can join. And so because of that, it's not open to the general public. And on top of that, actually, now I think about it, they're not FDIC insured, they're NCUA insured. Essentially, we are subsidizing credit unions. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. We are subsidizing credit unions, the taxpayer, to the detriment of for-profit banks. Love or hate banks, it doesn't matter. The banks are up against the wall when it comes to their competition against a credit union, especially smaller community banks. It's simply not fair. So we're subsidizing credit unions. The credit unions then, because they pay no income tax, can certainly say we can offer a higher rate. That's exactly what happened. So in this case, Navy Federal, like someone made a point that they might be trying to raise funds with this phenomenal rate they're offering. I don't know what they'd be needing to raise funds for. Someone made a suggestion they might be raising funds. Forgot what it was, but it's actually a pretty good point. And so that's why. But anyway, if you got a brokerage firm, Schwab, I'm sure Vanguard's brokers firm has brokered CDs. USAA does all the, I mean, you can certainly get CDs from the banks that are on the platform, all FDIC insured for sure. W-2 plus, yeah, we've got W-2, then you can do a Roth, absolutely, without question. How do you handle losses in your Roth? What I always say is cut your losses and ride the winners. So, I've heard this on so many different ways. If you close out your Roth, could you take a tax deduction as a capital loss? I don't know, Alberto, maybe. But if you have, you bought a fund at $10,000, it's worth $3,000 now. I mean, how I'd handle any investment, ride your winners, cut your losses. My wife is still 71. Can she still contribute to her Roth? I am SY. I'm still working. Okay, man. I can't remember the answer to that, Rick. My wife, I don't know. I don't know. Once you're above and beyond, you are still working. I don't know about that. So you have to look. I'm sure you can look on Google real quick. I just don't know. Sorry about that. When do you recommend immediate annuities in a Roth? I missed there. Oh, man. Yeah, man. You got it, Tony. Are you familiar with the white coat investor? Oh, here we go. So Robert, it says, when do you recommend immediate annuities in a Roth? When would I recommend them in a Roth? I guess the only time I'd recommend immediate annuities in a Roth is if I needed the income and I had no other accounts from which to draw it from. Ideally, the Roth is my last bucket to take money out of. And I love immediate annuities and traditional deferred accounts, IRAs. And the reason is because once you annuitize it, that money no longer has required minimum distributions. The minimum distributions are automatically are just gone because their money's coming out of the annuity each and every month. And so because of that, that essentially satisfies the IRS RMD tables. So if you had no money and you needed income and all your money is in a Roth, I would absolutely recommend an immediate annuity there. I mean, I can't think of too many other times I'd want to do that. And maybe if I had, I don't know. I'd have to think that through. I'm sure there's an example, but generally speaking, Robert, I'd have a hard time making an argument to make an income annuity inside a Roth IRA. The nice thing about it will be is that it is tax-free, that we know that. So if all you had was Social Security and a Roth IRA, income annuity would be fantastic, all tax-free. If all you had was Social Security, a Roth IRA, and stock account that was a high growth opportunity, and you want to leave that to your heir, man, even that, I still do that. So, and I don't know. I'd have to chomp on that some. I can't think off the top of my head how many times I'd want to do that, minimal at best. Yeah, Ken Atlanta, what's up, my man? I am familiar with White Coat Investor. I've heard of him. I think I just watched a video one of those guys was doing the other day. Yeah, okay, right here. We do not want our kids to fight about, here's my man Alberto. We don't want our kids to fight about money, so we want to have an independent executor to a trust. So a couple things is that, remember, an executor is for a will. A trustee is for a trust. You just got to make sure the semantics are cleared up there because it's actually critically important. So an executor or an executrix, the female for a will. And so we got to define here, Alberto, if we got an executor or a trust. If it's a trust and it's a trustee, that's what you want to make sure that the assets are managed beyond the grave. That's why the book is back there someplace. Beyond the Grave is a wonderful book to read from Gerald Condon, something like that, C-O-N-D-O-N, Beyond the Grave, because a trustee would manage that. A trustee would say, we're looking at Alberto and Ann's trust, and we're saying these guys want this to happen over this amount of time, and the trustee would make sure that happens for the benefit of the beneficiary, which would be your kids. And you would say it very explicitly. So some trusts are, you know, just a couple of pages. Wrong answer. We want the trust to cover as many rules that you can think of. The shades, believe it or not. Well, you all can't see that, but I'm looking at my shades there. When it comes to death of mom and dad, kids will fight over stupid stuff like the shades over the windows. It's dumb. And so you want to be able to stay explicitly. Janie gets the ring. Joey gets the baseball card collections. That's it. Done and done. That way, Janie cannot fight about the baseball card collections, even though you got a Babe Ruth rookie in there. But now, with that said, if Janie finds out that there's a Babe Ruth rookie card in there and she only got this, you know, crappy old Target ring, that's going to make her mad. So you got to think of equalization of beneficiary estates as well. And so the trustee is the person you need for sure. And in this case, you have you're the initial trustee. The successor trustee is the person who steps up in your when you're done. You're either dead or incapacitated, and the successor trustee always gets overlooked. So, folks, every time I look at trust documents, and I try not to do it so much anymore because they're pretty thick, and people faxing that stuff to me is a pain. Or not faxing, email to me is kind of a hassle. But if you have a trust, you want to find out who the successor trustee is. That nobody's more important than that. A grantor trust means you are the initial trustee. You're granting, most likely. I mean, I'm sure there's an exception to every rule. A grantor trust, a living trust, a revocable living trust, an inter vivos trust. You have the right to adjust it. You are the trustee. You're the grantor. It comes back to your Social Security number for taxation. Any income from there. At your death or incapacity, though, you've named in the trust document a successor trustee. If that successor trustee is Uncle Bob, who lives in Anchorage, Alaska, and he's got Alzheimer's, that's not going to do the job for it. You've got to make sure you name a successor trustee that can do the job for it, for not just today, but Alberto, let's give an example, 20 years to come. All right. So just because he named someone now who's 65 and spry as can be, when Alberto needs that guy early to step in, that guy's going to be 85 at that point as well. So you want to name a successor trustee who can do the job and who wants to do the job. Think about it. Do you really want to give to your Uncle Bob the authority to be able to distribute assets at the bequest of what you're saying on your trust document? So now Janie comes in and she's calling Uncle Bob all the time because Janie's got a problem sniffing stuff up her nose and she's hidden that from Uncle Bob. Joey over here, on the other hand, he's kicking butt and taking names. He leaves Uncle Bob alone, but Janie's on the phone like, man, I need the money. I need the money. I need the money. Bob's like, man, I didn't sign up for this. Yeah, you got to be careful there. And that is where a corporate trustee can make a difference. But they're not cheap. I'm just telling you right now, corporate trustees can charge an arm and a leg, but you're paying for that to absolve your loved ones of the pain of being a trustee. Let's see here. Hope that helps, Alberto. Just remember, a will is for executor. Executrix is will. That stops at your death. It gets distributed. Done. A trust is for to maintain your desires from beyond the grave. Should you sell a fund that's down to offset? Yes. should you sell a fund that's down to offset capital gain and dividend income? It won't offset dividend income, but it will offset capital gains. The answer to that, Tony, is 100% yes. So long as it's not in an IRA. Remember, it's got to be a capital taxable account, and that you don't rebuy it in 30 days and then avoid the and exercise the wash rule. So you got fund A that's up $10,000, fund B that's down $10,000. You sell fund A because you need to whatever. You sell fund B to offset it. You got no capital gain distribution whatsoever. Completely wipes itself off the mat. Absolutely. In fact, even if fund A was broken even and fund B was down $10,000, still sell that puppy. You can take that $10,000 gain and lock it a loss and lock it away for future use in the few in the further years. Wait 30 days if you like the fund or stock and buy back up again. No big deal, but just wait 30 days before you buy it again so you don't get caught up in the wash sale rule. Puerto Rico offers Act 2022, no taxes for 20 years. So there you go. So Puerto Rico is a good place to live if avoiding state income tax is a good place. And I think they have beaches there. I could have sworn I just saw all these Congress people who are protesting the government shutdown partying in Puerto Rico, if I'm not mistaken. So Puerto Rico looks like a good place for some of you who are enterprising and want to go to a tropic paradise that's still in the good old USA. Retirement income exclusion does not apply to earned income. There you go. So the $65,000 that we're talking about once you hit 65 is only on passive income, not your employment income. Good call, Ken. 10,000. Thank you, guys. Is it better to draw from your IRA and delay Social Security or take Social Security unless from? No, okay. So this is going to be very, I would want to probably 95 times out of 100, Richard, I would take my IRA first and delay Social Security. Now, there, I 100% of the time, 95% of the time, man, Social Security is such a wonderful thing. The 8% growth that you get on it, plus a cost of living, plus it's guaranteed by the feds, plus it's taxed so much more favorable, not even debatable to me. Are there 5% of the exceptions to the rule? Yes, i.e. you're going to die. But man, take Social Security later as you possibly can and take your IRA earlier, 100%, again, 95% of the time. S-corps are taxed or distributions are taxed as ordinary income if you get it. Now, there's a new thing with the UBI, Money in Life TV, a guy I interviewed, actually. Money in Life TV is a CPA out of California. I forgot his name off the top of my head. He's got a good YouTube channel. I like him. He said S-corp, he was talking about S-corps under I'm drawing a blank, with UBI business income. I forgot what the first letter is at. Something business income. It's flipping smoking deal. And so with S corporations, if you have this UBI, and I can't remember if that's what it is or not, it's 20% as opposed to ordinary income. It's a smoking deal. And it's so unique and so original. A lot of people don't really know how it works. And so if I'm looking at an S corporation and I have, I can't remember there's three letters, something BI. And I think it's you, but I don't shoot me if I'm wrong there. But man, it's fantastic. So generally speaking, S corp, it'll pay you It's going to pay you one of two ways. It's going to pay as a salary, which you have FICA and all that, which you should take. And then it's going to pay as a dividend distribution. And in my understanding on dividend distribution, it's been a long time since I've really been in that. When I was doing that for businesses, when I was a small business banker, that comes down as ordinary income. If I'm mistaken, that's fine. But I do know there's two ways to get income off an S corp. One is that it comes as a salary, which you have to pay income tax on, and the FICA. The other way is a dividend distribution, which I remember, and I might be wrong, is ordinary income. Even though it's a dividend, but it's not subject to FICA taxes. So a lot of people do this incorrectly, is they'll take a large dividend distribution to avoid FICA and take a small salary. And if you think the IRS doesn't know people are doing that, man, I got some waterfront property in Arizona to sell you, because the IRS is on that like white on rice. And that's just dumb financial planning anyway, because FICA, the bulk of that is Social Security, which is going to be your retirement plan. I mean, I just don't know why the enemy of social of people hate on Social Security. I mean, Social Security is a wonderful plan. It's a great way to just have a wonderful income source for retirement without question. But you're not going to get it if you don't have FICA. If you don't pay FICA, man, someone just paid $5 to me. That's, man, is that Corey? You're the man, Corey. Much obliged. That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. I appreciate that. Anyway, so FICA, if you're S corp and you're avoiding FICA, I'm telling you, I think you're making a mistake. I'm not saying you're going to do that, Rich, whoever asked me that, Jeff, but be careful. No pension, oops, will get out of 10, 12 years. And I'm thinking, okay. So this going back to our Army doc, now they got the new rules, the BRC, which you can actually get a portion of your pension if you don't serve the full 20. I don't know if that would be qualifier for you, my friends, but that's a good deal, man. That's a good deal, a new BRC, blended retirement system, or BRS, blended retirement system. I'm a huge fan of that. Again, it would have kept a lot of junior NCOs in for a few more years in which they can use their skill set, which is vastly needed in the military for sure. Salma? What's going on? Please advise. I'm maxing out my. Hold on a second. I got to get back to Jeff. We have to pay tax on the stock to Roth conversion. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So that's back in the question. I get 100 shares of Microsoft in the traditional IRA. I want to move that 100 shares to my Roth, but I don't want to sell and then have to rebuy it again. And so I'm going to just do a in-kind transfer from traditional to Roth. Yes, yes, yes. 100% taxable as ordinary income, but you still have your 100 shares now in Roth as opposed to your traditional IRA, assuming that you can pay the taxes outside of your IRA, which is hopefully what you can do. Salma says, I'm maxing out my Roth IRA, able to max out $24,000 traditional and want to do Roth 401k at the same time. Any limits? I'm maxing out my Roth, able to max out $24,000 traditional and want to do Roth 401k at the same time. Any limits? The only limit would be on your Roth, Salma, is if you make too much money, you couldn't do a contribution. I would do my $24,000 401k contribution. I would do it all to my Roth 401k. I wouldn't do any to the traditional. So in that case, you're putting what, $30,000 a year to the Roth. That's a fantastic deal for sure. You can't do both. You can't do $24,000 to the traditional and $24,000 to the Roth. You got to choose one or the other. So I would do that 2 seconds flat. That's a wonderful thing. Now, I don't know your tax situation. Please don't, you guys, yell at me and say, well, Salma, I don't know what the situation is. At the end of the day, if she has the ability to max out this, she probably has a pretty good income stream. And I'm telling you right now, Roth is wonderful. Roth is wonderful. Named after Bill Roth, the senator from Delaware. So there's another guy who's passed on to bigger and better things up in the big guy upstairs. But he has will forever be known as the guy the Roth was named after, and could not have a better account to max out. Thomas says, thanks. I understand what you're saying. I have cash as well as a 401k and was thinking that a contribution using cash wouldn't cost me any more taxes. All right, so here's thanks. I understand what you are saying. I have cash as well as a 401k. I was thinking that a contribution using cash wouldn't cost me any more taxes. No. Okay. Yeah. If you don't have earned income, Thomas, you can't do it. You'd have to use that cash to pay the taxes on your 401k conversions. I think I see what you're saying though, but you have to have earned income. Ken, S-Corp distributions based on the K-1 could be ordinary income or capital gains. There you go. So go see my man Ken in Atlanta. If you are a tax guy, Ken, definitely want to put your website here. I get tons of questions of good tax pros, and I frankly don't know a whole lot of them. And so if you are one and you are taking customers, put your website or your info down here so people can contact you. So basically the question was about how are S-Corp tax, as Jeff says, S-Corp distribution, my man Ken says S-Corp distributions are based on a K-1 where you want to kill yourself and then could be ordinary income or capital gains. So that's the answer to your question, Jeff, there for sure. I imagine Ken would agree with me in that regard about the difference between taking a dividend and a salary though. I'm telling you right now, if you want to be audited and you're running an auto detail shop, let's just use that for example, and you only give yourself a $5,000 salary and an $80,000 dividend distribution, yeah, as long as the government isn't shut down for long, the IRS will be knocking on your door saying, you think we're stupid? No. And they're gonna audit you for many years. And they should, because that's dumb. Roth conversions are taxable. Yep, exactly. Let's see here. I keep going up. Appreciate all your video, Fidel. Okay, Vanguard has CDs, Fidelity has CDs. Right on. There you go. Roth conversions are taxable. Yep, absolutely. My man, Joe Michaels. Joe, you had asked what my portfolio is. I'm going to answer. So here's old Josh's portfolio. And I've looked at this for the first time in a long, about 3 weeks or so. I own the Vanguard 2050-50 Target Retirement Fund. I own for my short-term cash needs, the Vanguard Ginnie Mae. I own two Cambria ETS. Cambria is run by my man, Meb Faber. And Meb stuff is on investing. I don't think there's a better podcast out there. Actually, I haven't looked at his podcast for a while. Is he still doing episodes? Hold on just a second. I haven't seen him for a long time on my feed. Is he still doing podcasts? He better be, because the Meb Faber show was. Hold on just a second, my friends. Meb Faber. And by the way, I have a podcast too. It's called the Josh Scanlon Podcast. So you can go there. To Josh Scanlon podcast on iTunes, and you can see my pod. I just did my first one for 2019 today. Where's my man Meb? Hold on just a second. Yeah, right there. So there's Meb Faber. That's his podcast right there. And he has new ones. That man, that's must listen to. Meb stuff is fantastic. So I own two Cambria ETFs, GMOM, which is a momentum one, and then VAMO, which is a momentum and value one. And the bulk of my money is in the 2055 Target Retirement Fund. My Vanguard Ginnie Mae is for my short-term cash needs. Those other two, I got a nice holdings in both of them, but that's what I have. And I have no clue what any of them have done over the last 12 months. I just don't know. The Ginnie Mae, I know just because I know it's low, simply because the interest rates are low. So that's my portfolio, Joe, in a nutshell. Pretty exquisite. You got it, Rich. Appreciates my videos. You got it, Slider. Jeff, not sure about 80% tax, blah, blah, blah. Bruce Smith there, upstate New York, freezing his pants off. Root for the Patriots, I'm sure. Ken says, Jeff, he's not sure about the 80% pass-through on subchapter K-1. Is there a yearly joint file maximum income you'd want to try and stay under that keep the IRS taxes lower? Maybe said keep taxes reasonable. Man, remember, I cannot stress this enough. Talked to two wonderful people today. Wonderful. That just is awesome. Remember, you got to know the difference between AGI and taxable income, two completely different things. So using last year's numbers, because I don't off the top of my head, 2019, I just don't know what the standard deduction is, 24.4, I think. But anyway, if you're under 65 and you have $100,000 of AGI, your taxable income with standard deduction is $76,000. Which means you are in the 12% tax bracket. All right. So the difference between the two is huge. So in this case, they had about $40,000 of pensions. All right. And we're kind of devising a plan for them to take dividends, ordinary qualified dividends, in which if they stayed within the 12% tax bracket, you know what their tax on those dividends are? A big fat goose egg. So if they have $40,000 of AGI, that's what they got so far with their pension, that means you subtract $24,000 out of that. And it's not quite this simple, but if you look at it like that, you say, okay, our taxable income, $40,000 pension is $16,000 bucks, right? That means we can essentially go basically $60,000 roughly. And that, look, this, I'm not a tax accountant. You'd want to see my man Ken in Atlanta. But you would say, I can go basically $60,000 of qualified dividends and pay nothing in capital and dividends, nothing. And now I get $60,000 of qualified dividends. I got $40,000 pension. The only taxes I'm paying would be on the difference, $40,000 minus $24,000, but be $16,000 of ordinary income. If I'm married, filing jointly, I'm in the 10% bracket. I got $80,000 of income. I'm paying $1,600. Nuts. It's crazy. Now, when these guys go into taking Social Security, well, that's going to be different because we talk about the provisional income rules and whatnot, but it's still going to be pretty favorable. And I don't really feel like, I don't know if I want to draw it out here. I'll do a video. No, I'm looking at my thing right here. I'm tempted to draw it out, but I'll go down a rabbit hole. I don't want to. All right. So anyway, you got to watch your tax brackets. And by the way, my new software just came out, the new 1040 is awesome. The 2019 1040s are out. So I'm going to be doing lots of videos of the new 1040. Woo-hoo-hoo! It's Christmas in January for old Josh. It's awesome. My man, Monty in Texas. If I believe Monty's in Frisco, I think, or maybe Plano. Can you talk sometime about renting my stock to others? I don't know anything about that, my friends. Is that what Dustin was talking about the other day? Dustin from Jazz Wealth, because I saw he did a video on selling covered calls. And he was using renting as kind of the term for that. Norway in the house as well. Even though American retirement planning doesn't help me, I find it interesting comparing to how it is in my country. Oh, man, it's awesome. Norway, right on, Tor. Hey, thanks for being here. Man, I tell you, God is good. The idea that old Josh is talking to a guy in Norway. Technology, my friends. It's Mike the CPA. That's it. Scott, Mike the CPA. You got it, man. Good guy there for sure. Let's see. Rick says no age limit for Roth 70. Hey, thanks, Sammy. Man, look at Sammy. I feel like a bum. Yeah, RIP John Bogle, man. Right on. And you guys, the idea that you guys have thrown money my way boggles my mind. I just am much obliged and much appreciated. I just spend the idea you guys are forget. You know, look, do not throw me money. I don't mean it like that. But the idea that people find that valuable enough to actually A, log in and listen to me yap, B, send money, and just being here is paying me too. I want to be very, very clear there. Just being here is paying me because YouTube looks at it for watch time. And the longer the watch time, the more YouTube is in love with me, which means the more they're putting this in front of other people, which means more people watch, and the more the advertisers pay. So do not feel like you got to send me money to make me feel good. Just being here makes me feel good. But the folks who did, I'm much obliged, man. It's incredible. Don't forget to pay FICA on that five. Jeez. Right on. How do I compare a CD that pays yearly versus one that, that's a good, I don't know. That's going to make my head spin and make me want to jump off a bridge. I'm sorry for Robert. That's tough. Just remember, look at the interest rate versus the APY. So just real quick, one thing I did learn in banking. They offer 5 point. So Navy Federal, their CD rates are 3.69 for that 40 month. But I'm telling you guys, that's a smoking deal. 3.69 was the interest rate, but the APY was 3.75 because that says they're reinvesting the dividends. So the dividends or the interest is being compounded. So if you're going to take the interest out, you're only getting 3.69. If you're compounding it, it's 3.75. That's why you see the difference between interest rate. Now they might, is that interest rate? Yeah, interest rate and APY, or is it APR? I can't remember, but there's two numbers. The lower one is just a straight rate you're getting. The higher one is a straight rate you're getting plus the interest being compounded, if that makes sense. I opt in the BRS, and right on. I'm since I'm 90% sure I'm getting out early in 2023. Absolutely. So If you are getting out of the military before your 20 is in, my friends, man, BRS is perfect for it, because I did a video on this a few months ago and I forgot off the top of my head, but I think it's 12. If you're 12 in, you get some portion of the pension. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'll do another video on that because that's a big deal. Big deal. Great Roth IRA max. I think it's gone up to 6,000. Yeah, 6,000 max. John Jess is right on, right? Yep. John Bogle, bless your soul. Man, and there, my man Bruce. John, if you're over 55, I do believe 7,000. Really? Okay. Is it 7,000 if you're over 50? I think it might be, man. Jeff, do a segment on setting a smart budget while delaying Social Security. Stop work at 63, aiming towards 70. Take 4% of net worth plus Social Security is 63. No, man, 100% in agreement with you there, my friend. Absolutely. BNS says, yo, yo, Josh, always so much excitement. Excitement on your end or my end? love your nerd energy. Yeah, man. Is rental property income considered earn income for that? No, absolutely. It's a passive income for sure. Absolutely, my friend. So it's passive income. Am I missing anything? It seems like, all right. So just changed to that this year, 7,000. Okay. All right, there you go. So my man, Jeff says, always wondered why APR and APY were different. Now I know. There you go, Jeff. You learned a thing or two. And then, okay. So 7,000. Now, some of the other questions, I had a lady, and I'm sure she's not on here because it's probably past her bedtime, but she was a 16-year-old lady who worked at Taco Bell part-time. And she says, can she, what was she asking me? And I want to tell you what, I had it. Hold on just a second. Should she file taxes? That's what it was. So I think she said she made $4,000 a year this year or last year in taxes. And the answer is absolutely. Most likely that her income will be below her standard deduction. So what happens is, oh man, are you Sarah Salma? We're having an issue on the video. That's my freaking Wi-Fi. Yeah. I hope I'm still on there. Yeah. I can see people dropping off. Yeah. There we go. Always my Wi-Fi is going to drive me up the wall. 46. Unable to hear me. Wi-Fi. Yep, 34. Any better now? Doesn't look like it. Nope. All right. I'm going to, yeah. Log off and log back on. Defo need to get a cable going forward. <It's gone. All right, so we're back. I'm hoping y'all can, let me get the thing here. Hold on just a second, boink. And we'll get the, yeah, I'm just buffering. Oh, can you hear it? Hey, can you hear it though? You can? Oh man, that's nuts. All right. Oh. All right, cool. Well, let's post the questions. All right, so let me go over these posted questions then. And if y'all can hear these, that's fantastic. All right, sweet. All right, so I work at Taco Bell. Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to say. So for this lady right here, this I'm just reading these. Where am I? Question. Jeff, what? Put your question back again, man, and we'll see. So tell your teen to file the tax returns. If they have taxes or they had them taken out from their job, they can turn around and file and get those taxes back as long as their standard deduction is higher than with the amount they had taken out. And I'm telling you right now, they certainly will have taxes with health. And not, they won't get the FICA back, but they're going to get the but they're gonna get the amount of the income that they had from the state and the Fed. So I'm just telling you, have your teen file a tax return. My goodness, do. And I'm telling you right now, I used to do the taxes for some of the football guys, and that, you know, I got a percentage of what I got back from. I don't even know that's legal, don't care. That's a long, long time ago, but it's a wonderful business. Say, look, I'll do your taxes. And they're like, what? I get money back. So yeah, you got 300 withheld from taxes. You don't have to pay it because your standard deduction's higher. I said, give me 10% or 20%, whatever it was. They thought they were making off like bandits. We noticed that 50% of our net worth is in real estate. Hopefully y'all can still hear this. I can't tell, but all right. So I'm going to yap. If this isn't working, that sucks. But I guess I'll just hear me speak. So anyway, they say we know it's 50% of our net worth is in real estate. Is that normal, or should we try to diversify? Let me just put. Man, I got no problem with 50% being in real estate. If I had 50% real estate and 50% in, all right, sweet. If I had 50% in real estate and 50% in liquid net worth, man, I got no qualm with that in the least, none whatsoever. Now, if I had 75 in real estate and 25, maybe not so much, but no problem at all. So to you, and you know who you asked that, 50% of real estate is just fine, in my opinion. Not sure of this person, but we're going to talk about my investments. If you had to do it again, starting in, and I was buffering again. Jeez Louise, you kidding me? Again? Okay. All right, sweet. All right, so if you had to do it again as a first-time investor, what fund would you do as a younger? I think the total stock market's the way to go. I really do. I know I looked at Wellington, whatnot, but you know, I still have a preference to have some internationally if I was young, for sure. I am not one of these people who think the markets are overvalued in the least. I don't think they're undervalued. I think they're right value, but I do think we've had 16 years of Bush and Obama with just limited growth. And if the American economy that we know can come out of that slump, it doesn't have to be, don't take this as being pro-Trump or anything like that, but the facts are, I mean, 2% in America is not the right answer. So if we can increase that by 50% to 3%, that's significant growth. I mean, that's like 1950s stuff right there, my friends. And if it was 1950s and you could be invested in the market, you'd be in a good place. So let me just give you an example. Remember those people I was telling you about earlier today, I was talking about. dude bought Nike in 1994, I think. I think his cost base was like $7,000. Now it's worth $234,000. Love or hate Nike, love or hate Phil Knight, doesn't matter. This guy has almost $250,000 on Nike. He had Pfizer. He had some other stocks that he just bought and sat on. The guy is only 52 years old. He just bought them. He bought them. And I'm telling you right now, he just sat on them. And so, you know, that's through, let's see, we had 94. All right, so 94 to 99 was fantastic. Then we had a huge down market. Then we had it coming back up a little bit. And then we had a huge down market. Then we had another run up again. But, I mean, that's almost 30 years of just of huge trials and tribulations of throughout the world. And yet he's sitting on huge gains. And he had like 25 stocks that just were way up. And I was trying to find something to sell for a loss so he could start taking some income when he retired. But there's just very few things there. I'm pro growth, great riff here. I'm pro growth, and whoever's going to get us growing the economy, man, I wish they could be more competitive on the politics. They just, I tell you, I'm a man born and raised on the left, trust me, the far left. I'm actually libertarian. I think having one party just going that far to the left, it's not good. And the Republicans, the Republican Party as a whole isn't worth the papers written on. But we just need political competition. We have political competition is good for everybody. And, you know, Clinton, to his credit, recognized that. I'm just going to say on a political note, Clinton's pollster, a guy named Mark Penn, he's written a bunch of, he's a big lib on the left. And he wrote, he's written some of the best political analysis lately, saying there's a huge middle class of America, of all races, all ethnicities, all religions, that needs to be appealed to. And the Democrats just keep writing these off. You're ceding the ground to Trump. And look, I like political competition, and there should be some pushback to bring him from the left to the right. In some regard, as much as Bernie, I mean, I don't think he's necessarily the guy, but maybe going around the typical tried and true of the old style, that might be okay. We'll see, but we shall see. But there's this huge. This is Mark Penn, who's Clinton's pollster, saying this, and I just anyway, we'll see what happens. What's happening in England right now is bad. All right. So let me give an example. They got a guy named Jeremy Corbyn, a huge anti-Semite, huge, huge socialist, but like the old days of socialism, with Theresa May just being a typical Republican here, just completely out of her element. This guy's going to probably win. And just because there's no middle ground, Theresa May is not the person for it. And so you're going to have the UK. And the next time they vote for prime minister is going to be by this horrible man. No other way around that. Hezbollah, just a horrible guy. And it just can't have that happen. And so when one party goes way far in one direction and the other party has, they just, you have to be in the middle. And yeah, you can't see the ground, because then it's just bad. And the folks in the UK are going to pay the price for that, because Theresa May is just incompetent. Too bad. All right. As a young person just getting started in life, where do you save or invest first? Because as an older person trying to play catch up, would I save or invest first? I'm a fan of investing. Bruce, you asked that question. I think investing is the way to go, simply because it can do essentially both. And this is where I say at the end of the day, I think you borrow money from a credit card, hopefully at 0%, and dump into a Roth IRA to do both. You're saving and you're investing at the same time, knowing that you're going to pay $100 a month on that credit card to pay that sucker off. I think that's a good place. I've done that myself, and I'm actually glad I did, because at future points, it's nice to be able to have cash money on the table to do things with, as opposed to having to go to some banker with my hat in hand begging for money. And you don't ever want to do that. So I like the idea of saving and investing at the same time. And the Roth is wonderful for that. All right. So we got some more questions on here. The large cap companies in the VTSAX give you international exposure, as do the, yeah, right on. I think that's right. You get the benefit of U.S. accounting responsibilities to minimize exposure to the currency. Man, I 100% agree with that, John Justice. His issue is you can have international exposure with the total stock index at Vanguard, because these companies are selling product overseas without the currency exposure and the U.S. the favorable U.S. tax code. That's a great point, man, without question. My man Joe, why are we bullish on international when U.S. stocks seem to perform much better? Yeah, I'm not. I think John's answer to that, not to your question directly, Joe, but I think John makes a lot of sense there. If you like international stocks, you can get exposure just by being U.S. without question. I mean, look at Nike. I mean, my goodness. I was reading an article from so in Turkey. All right, Turkey is trying to arrest the center, I think, for the New York Knicks because he's against Erdogan. And they're trying to arrest this guy. And Nike, i.e. the Colin Kaepernick thing there, you know, you got to stand for something, even if it means sacrifice everything. Nike wouldn't stick up for this guy, Cantor, I think is his name, from the New York Knicks, even though they say you got to stand for something, even if it means sacrificing anything, because Nike wants to do business in Turkey. And that's, look, man, I mean, that's they can, it's capitalism, man. They can do whatever they want. I find it hypocritical at the least, but that gives you proof of being an American company doing business with firms overseas. That's what's happening there. So Nike says, we're not going to support Cantor, even though we support Kaepernick, even though Cantor is literally going to be trying to be prosecuted for his support of, an anti-Erdogan government in Turkey. And you don't have to like that. You might like whatever that dude's name, Recep. But at the end of the day, if you're going to have this political campaign selling shoes, you got to sacrifice, stand for something, even if it means sacrifice anything, everything, and yet you're not going to support the guy who's literally doing that. I find that odd. But Nike, the reason they don't want to support this guy, because they don't want to lose the business in Turkey. And that's international stocks. Or domestic stocks with international exposure right there for sure. I'm actually not that bullish on international stocks as a whole, Joe, but I think we've heard this, we've played this many, many years. I've come and gone on this. And now that I'm 48 and a half years old, I say, you know, at the end of the day, we don't know what these guys are doing. All these people are saying about China. I mean, China is still communistic. I mean, it is at the end of the day. We don't know what they're fraudulent, their accounting department. We have no clue what's going on in their numbers. None whatsoever. Yeah, I mean, Germany, I mean, my goodness, Merkel, there'll be some tried and true blue chips that will probably do okay because it's basically supported by the government. But you can get that here. And you, like John just was saying, you can get international exposure here for sure. So I'm a fan of doing that, just buying the total stock index. And be done with that. I got no problem with that at all. Same way to figure budget while waiting. Yeah, we talked about that. We'll get on that. I'll do some stuff on that. Can I transfer taxable investment? And you want to at Fidelity? You want to have 100 shares at Vanguard? Absolutely. It's just an ACAT or a transfer in kind. However, their back ends to each other. So all that will happen is. Vanguard, Fidelity will be on the account statement now, and pretty soon it'll be Vanguard. Literally that simple. You got to make sure, man, that you say this is a transfer in kind. Do not sell stuff. Transfer in kind. That happens all the time. Easy as pie. Just make sure you stay that. Why VTSAX? I think VTSAX is the Admiral shares of the total stock index, if I'm not mistaken. And so the total stock index, Jim, is you have the entirety of the U.S. market, of which 70% of that is the S&P 500 and 30% is what's called the extended market, the smaller and mid-sized companies. So literally in one holding, you have the entirety of the U.S. market, which a good portion is small and mid-sized companies as well. A lot of people go to the VFINX or whatever the Admiral shares of the S&P 500, and they're missing on small and mid-sized companies, and I think that's a mistake. So I like the total stock market just because it has both small and large and mid. Predominantly, it's going to be large. You know, don't get me wrong. And when I ran those numbers from 2001 to 2017, I mean, the total stock market beat the S&P 500 every which way. I mean, it just did. So I'm a fan of VTSMX, or in this case, VTSAX for the Admiral shares. Yeah, and John talks about that right there, right on. So my work 401k program recommends 25 to 30% international component in my age and end game. Yeah, I don't. That's too much, man. I don't. Dan, I don't think I'd have 25 to 30% internationally. I used to think that way. Not that long ago. Being not that many years ago. But I just think the U.S. is back. That might be my politics clouding my thought process. But, I mean, we just found the biggest oil and natural gas reserve ever in the Permian Basin down there in Texas, West Texas, and going to New Mexico. And that they're just tapping. That's just a tip of the iceberg. I mean, that's the biggest one ever. And when electricity is low, I mean, you know, our nation is built on electricity. With low and cheap electricity, I love it. I think, how can you not be stoked if if you live in New York like Bruce or live in northern New England, and they're not letting the natural gas flow in there, that's bad. But everybody else has abundant natural gas and oil and whatnot. It's just cheap. And when it's cheap, it just means things can get done that before could not get done, and growth will happen. So I'm just bullish on the United States. I really am. And on top of that, 16 years of Bush and Obama keeping the growth under wraps at 2%, that doesn't get the job done. And if you go from 2 to 3, that's a 50% increase in growth. That's enormous. And you do that for a few years straight, I shudder to think of where the economy is going to be 5 years from now. It's going to be fantastic. There's a lot to be negative on. I get that. There's always a lot to be. But, man, I don't know how you couldn't be bullish in the U.S. right now. And Warren Buffett is a big lib, and he talks about it too. He's bullish on the United States. And if Warren Buffett is bullish on the United States as a liberal and me as a libertarian-leaning conservative, I'm bullish on the United States as well. And I think the bulk of your holdings should be in domestic stocks without question. Yeah, PGE going bankrupt, I don't know. I hate to say it, but they're at the whim of their governing. That's the government of California. Probably CalPERS, I'm sure, has some people on their board of directors. When you run as a utility, you are a political entity. No other way around that. And PGE going bankrupt, I can't say it shocks me. It just, I don't follow that much, but someone had made a point about PGE going bankrupt on Sunday, actually, when I was talking about, I did a video on something, I forgot what it was. And so that was good foresight there, but it can't be good. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. Jim says, y'all on Fidelity. Look, there's nothing wrong with Fidelity. I got no problem with Fidelity. I just like Bogle. Bogle's a hero of mine from Vanguard. And the sad thing is now that Bogle's gone and won't be there to at least give them an eye at some of their silliness, you could see Vanguard maybe going a different direction, maybe. But the thing with Vanguard, it is owned by the investors. And the investors do not want to pay more on their investments. And so there might be some shenanigans at Vanguard without Bogle there to scold them. But the facts of Fidelity is not owned by the investors. It's owned by the Johnson family. And Vanguard is owned by the investors. Now, as I said in a video yesterday, you and me and everybody on this YouTube channel, we don't have a say in how Vanguard's run. But the people who do have a say, I guarantee they like low cost investments and they want to see that continue. So that's why I still like Vanguard. And by the way, I worked at Vanguard. I worked at Schwab. I never worked at Fidelity. So I'm ignorant about Fidelity from the inside, but I haven't worked at Vanguard. They taught me well. I'm a fan for sure. All right. Let's see. We'll just finish a couple more of these questions. So a guy said, my question, am I paying too many fees for all my fund managers? He had a private firm. How does he figure it out? You just got to ask. And so what you got to do is you say, hey, or look at your end of the year statement. There's going to be a line item for fees. All right. And so you got to do one of two things. You look at that end of year statement. There's going to be a line item for fees and you'll see what your fees are. And then you say it's $10,000. And then you got to look at your holdings. If they're five tickers, that's going to be a mutual fund. And that means it has its own holdings. So if it has five letters in the ticker, VTSAX, VTSMX, that give an example, or someone said FKINX, if they have five letters in their ticker, that means it's a mutual fund. That means there's going to be further expenses. If there's three letters or four letters, that could be an ETF or it could be a stock. And so if it's a stock, there won't be any further expenses. If it's an ETF, it could be, there will be more expenses as well, most likely lower than that of a mutual fund, but not all the time. I mean, Cambria, who I already told you I own a couple, their fees are pretty low, but they're higher than some of the funds that are out there for sure. So you just got to find out. So you say, here are my fees, the manager, the guy who's managing my money, and what do I own? Well, if I own individual stocks, no further fees. However, if I own mutual funds, there are going to be further fees. And I just ask, I say, what's my total all-in fee, guy? That's what I say. What's my total all-in fee? Not just what you get paid, but how much am I paying for those investments that you're managing for me? And you can find out there. They should be able to calculate that quite quickly. Talking to a lady 2 months ago, I think, a month ago, and she was saying she asked that question of her guy, and he hemmed it. It's a Schwab guy. He hemmed and hopped. And I was like, dude, I mean, come on, man. What's this hemming and hawing? You're a Schwab. It's weird. And the minute they start hemming and hawing, no, wrong answer. I was born in 69. My husband was born in 52. He started collecting Social Security this year at 66. And we just got married last week. I have an inheritance from my mom. I was wondering if I could make sense for my husband to pay back the Social Security he's already taken. I'd pay it and pay him the $2,000. All right. So basically, she's looking at survivor benefits. A lot going on in this question here. So she's saying, can I pay back my husband's Social Security that he started taking this year, and basically instead of and then pay him the monthly check from my own inheritance I got from my mom, that way when he dies, because it looks like he's quite a bit younger, she's quite a bit younger, and then she can collect his survivor benefits at the age of 70. It's going to be tough there, because if she is born in 69, that makes her about 50 years old this year. And if she's working, she might build up a bigger benefit than even her survivor benefit would be on his. That's a lot going on there. I don't know. If she stopped working, I would absolutely do what she says. If she doesn't have much of a Social Security benefit, I would do that in order to get the husband's survivor benefit when he dies, because he certainly died before she does. If she's still working, making an income, that's pretty good. I don't think it's worth it, because her benefit will probably be higher than his. A lot going on there, but that's a good question, though, actually. I like people thinking outside the box. From a financial standpoint, when's the best time to retire? When you want to get the heck out of your crappy old job? Absolutely. And you don't have any debt. Literally, if you have no debt, it opens up a whole new realm of your ability to retire for sure. Let's see what else we got. Just real quick. Looks like no one has anyone else posted anything. Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. Fidelity's waking up a low cost indexing. Yep. ETF versus index mutual funds, pros and cons. Yes, 100% ETFs and regular accounts to avoid capital gain distributions. You got it, Robert. 100%. I don't think there's that much of a difference between ETFs and low cost mutual funds in an IRA at that stage. I'd actually go the open ended mutual fund, because they're open ended. You can buy into it and sell it without having to pay a commission. So ETFs in your taxable account, mutual funds in your IRA makes sense without question. What's the difference between international and emerging markets? Is Turkey an emerging market? Is Turkey a developed market? Is part of Europe? Who knows? China, who knows? Is that emerging market? So emerging markets would be probably still like Thailand is still emerging market. With Malaysia, probably Malaysia. And nowadays Venezuela would be an emerging market, which is nuts, because 15 before Chavez came is the richest country in South America. That'd be an emerging market. Brazil always seems to be an emerging market. What's your question, Daniel? I didn't see it. So ask it again, man. I'll answer it. So it's hard to say the difference between emerging markets or international. I just think in terms of the country size, Russia, that being international, but I don't know. It'd be tough to say. What do you have to think about having a dividend growth portfolio retirement instead of your money in mutual funds? I like dividend growth in Roth IRAs. Absolutely. I do not like them in taxable accounts. Yeah, I gotcha. I don't like them in taxable accounts because the dividends that you receive are taxable to you, which are going to affect your Social Security. And if you have IRA distributions, all those will be now taxed. You got dividends, IRA distributions, and Social Security. Much rather have your dividends in a Roth. That way, if you want to withdraw that, it's tax-free for sure. So I like dividends. I mean, I'm a huge fan. If you look at the American Funds Income Fund of America, they do this chart going back to 1932, I think is when it's founded, dividends versus no dividends, and the dividends that are reinvested. I mean, it's just nuts how much more is worth. Bitcoin, I got to tell you, Daniel, I know crypto and I follow a couple guys who talk a lot about it, but I just don't know that much about it to give you a good thought on it. Some guys are huge on it that I respect. Some guys I respect or not, from a libertarian perspective. And that's where I'm coming from for all this stuff. A lot of libertarians think it's a way to get the days of the fiat currency behind us. Some other libertarians just, in terms of any cryptocurrency, they don't think it's that big of a deal. Of the cryptocurrencies that would be, Bitcoin would be it for sure. As an investment, I can't answer that. I just don't know. I'm ignorant about it for sure. You just got to do your research on it. And, as any investment, you got to recognize you could lose it all for sure. And there we go. Jim says he's down 90% on crypto. Bull hold. Yeah. Still going over crypto. I thought it was interesting, though. Scared to jump back in the market. How do I get over this? It's a tough one, man. Just don't look at it. Stop looking at the news. Literally, I looked at, I look at my four holdings. I just don't look at them. And that's the way to do it, Robert. Just say, I'm not going to look at it. I don't care. I'm going to get a good diversified portfolio of stuff that's low cost that I like. And I'm just going to sit there and look at it once a year and be done with it. There's no other way to do that. Because you can look at it every day. There's always a reason to be frightful. Need more retirement stuff. Yeah, no, I know, Scott, man, I got some good stuff for you, my friend. We got Donna in Illinois. Can't you retire in 2 years? We got that coming up. We got a couple, and I'm drawing a blank on their name. So Donna's single. She can retire in 2 years from Illinois. Can she? We shall see. This couple from Maryland, can they retire in when was it? I think she wants to retire this year, and he says he's not so sure. So I got a lot of good stuff to get back into that. I love. Oh, I already said this. They get new tax forms are available in 2019 too, so it'll be cool. All right, folks. I'm gonna do just one more here because I'm getting tired. See, I get up like 4:35, and now for my time it's 9:22. I'm gonna crush the old man. We're watching a show called Shetland. My wife and I. No, they don't have to leave the state for tax purposes. That's what they said. I'm telling you. So Jim N says they got to leave the state for tax purposes. No, I'm telling you right now. They don't. I told them that. I said, don't do it. You're going to be just fine. So hang in there. I'm going to show you. It's not that bad. Just for the 20 millionth time, my friends, tell your Maryland friends, anyone who lives in Maryland, for the love of the good Lord, do not roll over. If you live in Maryland or are going to retire there, do not roll over your 401k, TSP, all that to an IRA. Maryland is very favorable tax-wise on a 401k, TSP, 403b, but it's not very favorable in IRA distributions, I mean. So if you know people in Maryland, tell them don't. I don't care what any stupid financial advisor says, don't do it. No, you can't do a like kind of exchange from a 401k to an IRA. You can't do that. Anyway, so tell your Maryland friends. I'm from Maryland, 56, put my retirement notice. They asked that I stick around and work part-time, wait for the new hire, but I'm ready to go. Hang it up, man. I got your emails, Thomas. I gotta get back to you, man, on that. This has been a busy week, actually. So, Thomas Major, I got your emails. I will revert back to you on that. So, we got Daniel. This will be the last one here real quick. If I plan to retire early, have been told to contribute to a traditional 401k, but my mom says the future is uncertain. I would do the Roth. Absolutely. Daniel, I would do the Roth. Do it when you're young. The amount of tax-free growth in that sucker. Just think about the guys telling you about who bought Nike stock in 1994. Now it's worth $250,000. Think if you did that in a Roth, it's tax-free. Man. Yeah, Shetland, right on. All right, dogs. All right, guys. Shetland, I've had Shetland dogs, right? Shetland ponies or Shetland dogs? I can't remember. Sorry, don't mean to defend you. Not dogs. All right, my friends, I am out. Hey, thanks, Dave. I appreciate that. We'll see you guys next time. I'll do this every week, man. I love it. So throw your questions out here. I appreciate y'all being here, and thanks for hanging in. Neil, my man Neil, what's up? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Neil. Neil, my Scottish friend. Absolutely. Man. If you ever watch Outlander, Neil, you'll probably go crazy, these fake accents, but my wife loved it, and it's all from Scotland, anyway, all right, we'll see you guys later, but we'll see you next time. If you have any questions, let me know. Don't forget to comment, and again, I appreciate you being on here, appreciate you hanging again for this second version, but I'm out of here. We'll see you next time. Thanks, guys.